Okay, so the next talk, last talk before lunch, is by Johan Chang, who is has just taken up a position at the University of Zurich in Switzerland. He will tell us about charge ordering in YBCO observed by hard X-ray scattering this time.
Okay, thank Louis for this introduction, and also thanks to Louis and Antoine for organizing this meeting and for the invitation. I would like to start by thanking my collaborators. There's many of them, as you can see, so I cannot thank each of them individually. In this talk, I was going to speak about hard X-ray diffraction experiments on YPCO, where we have been able to probe the charge density wave order. And the topic has been very well introduced by the previous three speakers. And so I figured out that, so my talk would go quite directly without too much introduction. I would try to address two topics. One is related to the charge density wave anisotropy in underdoped YBCO. And secondly, I would come back to this topic of how the charge density wave in YBCO relates to the stripe order in LBCO. Now, when I looked at these questions that were circulated before the meeting, I realized that most of the questions was actually related to the pseudogap phase. So I decided to add a second topic to this talk, which is about pseudogap physics and charge order, and that's a photoemission experiment. So basically, I would tell you about two types of synchrotron experiments on cuprates. And as I mentioned, there has been a lot of introduction, so I would not repeat. So I go directly to the hard X-ray diffraction experiments, and there, basically, this technique is a technique that is sensitive to the lattice, and so we are sensitive to all atoms in a unit cell, as opposed to the soft X-ray resonant diffraction, where that is site sensitive. And that fact has some advantages and disadvantages that I would come to. The first thing is that, as I mentioned, we are sensitive to the lattice. So when we have YBCO, this is the cartoon of the YBCO crystal structure, and you see we have these oxygen chains, and in this cartoon it's basically showing this so-called O2-2 structure, where every second chain is empty on the oxygen side. And that leads to a doubling of the unit cell along the A-axis direction. So if we scan along the reciprocal A-axis direction, we find Bragg peaks at half integer values. And then there exist different types of modulations of the oxygen chains. We have O2-8 and O2-3 with period 8 and 3. And we can map out these structures very well. We can also scan in the perpendicular direction to the carboxygen plane, so we can tell how well are these oxygen chains stacked. And so these are scans along the reciprocal C-axis direction, and you can see from in red here, that's the O2-2, it's much sharper than the O2-8 and the O2-3. So it tells us that basically the O2-2 structure is much easier to it's easier to stack these chains. Okay, so now one of the advantages, as Mathieu mentioned, of hard X-ray diffraction is that we have a lot of flexibility to scan in reciprocal space. So we can basically decide which direction we want to scan in and in which zone we would like to sit in. So here on the top panels, I'm showing you a scan like this, a scan one, through this incommensurate charge density wave modulation peak. And here we are sitting in the second zone and varying field and temperature. We can also scan like in the perpendicular in-plane direction. And again, we see this lattice modulation peak, incommensurate lattice modulation peak. And as Mathieu mentioned, we have this opportunity to scan in the perpendicular direction. And what we found was that, so basically we scanned the outer plane direction on this lattice modulation peak, and what we found is that it's peaking at half integer values. So it tells us that the charge density wave order is doubling along the c-axis direction. It's doubling the unit cell along the c-axis direction. And finally, so these were results taken, that was the initial result taken on 028. We also scanned along the reciprocal b-axis direction. And here is, basically this is the scanned. Can you speak more in the mic? Okay, yes, so I should speak more in the microphone. Here is, basically it's the charge density wave peak in three different zones. So we can track it in from zone to zone. And so flexibility is in Q space is one advantage of the hard X-ray technique. The other advantage is that we do not have to deal with vacuum conditions, so we have better possibilities to insert magnets. And we use this to apply or to study this charge density wave order in magnetic field and as function of temperature. So what I'm showing you here is the peak amplitude as a function of temperature for different magnetic fields. And so this plus has been shown in previous slides by other speakers, but I just repeat, we have basically this upgoing, so if we come from high temperature, at some point there's an onset and the peak is gradually growing until we hit the superconducting transition temperature. If we cool into the superconducting state, this in zero field, this amplitude of the charge modulation peak is partially suppressed. And now, if we apply magnetic field, we basically see that this kind of cusp-like temperature dependence is shifted to lower temperatures. And that is gradually, that effect is seen even in the highest magnetic field of 17 Tesla. So basically, the most standard way of interpreting these data is a competition between charge density wave order and superconductivity. So when we apply the magnetic field, we suppress superconductivity and in turn enhance the charge density wave order. So in the previous sessions, there was a lot of discussion about the connection between this kind of charge density wave order and then the charge density wave order seen in high magnetic field. And in some sense, this is so here we have data taken at 15 and 17 Tesla. So that's basically the overlap. And in my opinion, that's a very small overlap we have. Basically I can tell you that very little time has been spent in very high magnetic fields of 17 Tesla. So reciprocal space is enormous, and what we have done is to track these peaks that we found in zero field up to high magnetic field. So, I mean, I think we should really go and do the experiments more systematic and search broader in high magnetic fields in order to address this question of whether there's a difference between this type of charge density wave and the one seen by NMR in high fields. And ultrasound experiments also. These were the initial data we got on 028. I would like to summarize to you the data taken on 022. So what I'm showing you here is summarizing data displayed in that paper. Basically, I'm showing you four scans. And so blue is a scan along the reciprocal b-axis direction, and red is along the reciprocal a-axis. And as you can see, basically it's different zones. So one is for L, 1.5, so that's the component out of plane, the out of plane component. So for low values of that, we basically see no evidence of charge density wave order. But at L and 6.5, we find a very clear peak in along the b-axis direction. But the equivalent scan along the c-axis, along the a-axis direction show no evidence of within the noise of charge density wave order. So there's some kind of anisotropy. So what I want to add now to this is four more scans. So two of them is here. So I just want to show you, if we go to another zone, so if you go to 7.5, this anisotropy is reversed. So suddenly we see the charge density wave along the A-axis direction, but not along the B-axis direction. And if we go to 5.5, then we find that they are basically having similar amplitude. So the point I want to make is that one should be careful by picking out like scans in one zone and make conclusions from that. The conclusions I think we can draw from this is that we see charge density wave modulation along both the reciprocal A-axis and B-axis direction. And the anisotropy here, one should be careful with interpretation. As I mentioned, we are sensitive to all atoms in the unit cell, so we should be careful. We cannot immediately tell that this anisotropy that we see is coming from the copper oxide plane. It could also be coming from heavy atoms between the planes. As a final remark to this slide, you can see that basically at low L, we see no charge density wave peak. And so if we want, there's this kind of, we would like to study this charge density wave order in high magnetic field. Now in order to, nature is so unkind with us that, so if we turn the crystal to get to this reflection, then the magnetic field is no longer perpendicular to the C-axis, or not parallel to the C-axis. So basically the effective field, if you have 17 Tesla and you go to this peak, you're down to 10. So it's difficult to make the overlap with the NMR and ultrasound experiments using these peaks here. Okay, just the one slide remark to say that we see this this charge density wave order along both directions, also in a more underdoped YBCO. So to summarize, we find basically the similar incommensurability for all the compounds that we have measured. We find this is the temperature dependence of the peak amplitude is very similar for A and B axis direction, and also the correlation length is similar. Here's this plotted a function of our scattering vector. So that's kind of a summary of the data. Now I come to the comparison to the or the relation between the charge density wave order in YBCO and in lanthanum-based compounds. And so I start by showing you results obtained on LBCO. We have seen this phase diagram several times. So what Markus Hüger he did on this system was to study the charge ordering parameter that is related to the diffracted intensity squared. Or square root. So he studied the intensities very carefully as function of magnetic field and as function of doping. And what you see is that, so this is the order parameter that is extracted. Then the idea is that at 1-8 doping, where superconductivity is suppressed, there basically there's no magnetic field effect. And so that at that doping, it's assumed that the charge density wave order is fully developed, so that is given the value of 1. And now you see whether you dope it on each side of the 1-8 doping, basically the order parameter is decreasing. So basically, he found a very sharply peaking charge density wave order as a function of doping, and it's peaking right at 1-8 doping. What you also see is that the order parameter is not directly proportional to the onset temperature. So if you want to speak about order parameters, we really have to do this careful study. It might not be enough to look at the onset of the charge density wave order. So we try to do the same or a similar kind of study on YBCO. And so there, the situation is a bit different because at 1-8 doping, we still have superconductivity. And so that means that we still have a magnetic field effect. So what we did was to say that probably at 17 Tesla,
we are close to the saturated or the fully developed charge density wave order. So we normalized all intensities to that. Then we measured the peak amplitudes very carefully as function of doping. For example, at the temperature of at TC, where the charge density wave order is maximum in a zero magnetic field. That led us to draw this kind of phase diagram of the charge ordering parameter. So basically, we find that it has a maximum at 1/8 doping, and it decreases on both sides. It's very similar to what was found in LBCO. It peaks at 1/8 doping. Then, as we have discussed, there's this difference between the lanthanum-based compounds, which has charge and stripe order, charge and spin order. No spin order is found in YBCO at this doping regime. The spin order comes in at lower doping. Here I'm plotting the spin density wave volume fraction, so it's different from the order parameter, extracted from USI experiment in this reference there. So one question is whether we can have a charge order coexisting with spin density wave order in YBCO. These results here, combined with Mathieu's results, suggest that there's a competition between the charge density wave order and the spin density wave order. And perhaps this dome here, one way to understand it would be that we have competition on both sides. On this side, we have competition with superconductivity. On that side, we have competition with spin density wave order. Okay, so that was a summary of the hard X-ray diffraction experiments. Now I would like to move to the second topic of this talk, to the pseudogap physics and stripe order. So there's the question whether there's a relation between pseudogap physics and the charge density wave order. In some sense, it would be nice to have techniques that can probe both of these phenomena. This is basically the philosophy. I'm trying to establish a technique that can probe both of these phenomena. Marc-Henri, he made the analog between or compared cuprates, the YBCO results with niobium diselenide. I take up on that, and here is basically, this is a photoemission experiment on niobium diselenide. It's a charge density wave system. And here you see photoemission spectra taken at different point in reciprocal space. And basically what you see is that there's this low energy quasi-particle peak. And basically it's measured above the ordering temperature and below it. So it's crossing the charge density wave ordering temperature. And you see at certain points in reciprocal space, at points C and D, basically there's a strong suppression of spectral weight. And this effect is a quite quite pronounced effect in the sense that it goes up to energies that is almost 100 millivolt. So it's a quite clear effect, but it happens only at certain points in K space. So in principle, in niobium diselenide, it's possible to probe the charge density wave order with photoemission. Whereas in the cuprates, photoemission has been used a lot to study the pseudogap phase. So now we wanted to try. So the idea was we wanted to try to find similar effects in the cuprates, and we thought that perhaps the LBCO at 1/8 doping would be the best candidate. There has already been photoemission studies of that compound. One is from Tony Valla, and they found that this is the pseudogap at the antinode as a function of doping, and they found this kind of quite sharp peak at 1/8 doping. A later study, this is from the CX Chen group. It's on the same compound in the normal state. They are plotting here also the pseudogap as a function of momentum. And so zero here means the node. and 1 means the antinode. So what they're plotting is the gap as it evolves from the node to the antinode. And they found that there's this kink in the gap dependence, K dependence. And they interpreted that as a two-gap, in terms of a two-gap scenario. So they kind of said that the pseudo-gap has two components. Now, what we did was to, we took a slightly different system. It's also a stripe system, but we chose this neodymium-doped LSCO system because it gives us a wider doping range. So we can actually study the system from 1-8 doping all the way to the overdope side. And this is kind of this is how the photoemission spectra, antinodal photoemission spectra, looks like as a function of doping. And we see that for each composition, we have finite intensity at the Fermi level. So we can define a Fermi underlying Fermi momenta and look at the then we can look at the we looked at the energy dependence, so the so-called EDCs, and we have symmetrized these data. It's not because we know that it's the system has particle hole symmetry. By contrary, we have evidence in some of these lanthanum compounds that in the very overdope regime that there's a particle hole asymmetry. The reason why we symmetrize these data is that it gives a very visual it's a very visual way to describe whether there's a gap or not in the spectrum. So for example, for this very overdoped compound, 24% doped, it is peaking at zero energy at the Fermi level. So it suggests that we have gapless excitations. Now, if we go to the...
What's the temperature?
So this is just above TC. So it's up here. So we are just above the superconducting dome. The other advantage of this, that's a good point. The other advantage of this system is that TC is very suppressed. So we can actually study the normal state to very low temperature. Now, if we reduce the doping a little bit, keeping still outside the superconducting dome, if we reduce it to 20%, we now have this, the intensity has a minimum at 1-8 doping. So it's evidencing a gap.
It's
at zero, at the Fermi level. Yeah. Did I say 1-8 doping?
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm saying funny things. So basically, this has a minimum at zero energy. So the spectra has a minimum at zero energy, and that evidence a gap. It's consistent with the transport experiment from Louis Teifer's group, where there was no evidence of a pseudogap in the 24%, and from resistivity, a pseudogap energy scale of 80 Kelvin was extracted in the 20%. And if we do the temperature dependence, we see that approximately at 80, the gap is closing. So it's tempting to interpret this gap as the pseudogap. Now, we have these ways different ways to manipulate the pseudo gap. We can dope it, change it with doping. We can change it with K dependence and temperature dependence. We can model it and parameterize this line shape by using the spectral function and using this very simple forms of the self energy. So basically, we have two parameters. One is the gap, which is given basically by the peak here. The peak energy scale, and the other one is the electron scattering rate, which we approximate with a constant. It's basically the width of these peaks. And so we have just these two parameters, and when we fit the data, we find we can extract the gap as a function of scattering, and we find that there's a correlation between them. 2 minutes, yeah, so I have to speed up. Basically, there's a correlation, so the larger scattering, the larger pseudo gap. It's consistent with calculations on the Hobart model, perhaps André-Marie Tremblay would speak more about that later. The last part, I just want to show you that if we do the same experiment at the 1-8 doping, so the stripe-ordered compound, we have this very similar line shape, and if we parameterize it in the same way, it falls there. So basically nothing happens when you go from the overdope side to the 1-8. except if you go to the antinode, then you see in black here that this peak is strongly suppressed. So it resembles this niobium diselenide. So depending on where you're sitting on the this Fermi surface, you can have strong suppression. So we did the temperature dependence, and we found that by going above the charge ordering temperature, again, we recover spectral weight in a very similar energy scale as in niobium diselenide. And if we combine what I've said previously, we can also weaken the charge order by strong charge doping, and again, we recover spectral weight below 100 millivolt. So to summarize, we have this effect here that mimics very much what is seen in niobium diselenide. If you combine it with previous experiments on LBCO, it could suggest that there's some additional effect around 1A doping in the antinodal spectra of these lanthanum-based dry-bordered compounds. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention.